Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you, sir?
You look slick, you look very dapper, you got the thing going, the suit. Well appointed as well.
With the dark crap?
I could only muster up a tie, you've got the suit coat on, Amy's dressed appropriately in black. Daniel, I mean, John's got the patriotic thing going on. I'm gonna have to up my game.
Bust out those new, brand new bolos.
Get a new one. Anyone going to Southwest, pick me up a nice turquoise, would you? Are we 6:15 yet? What are your timepieces, ladies and gentlemen? I say six.
6:16.
You will now call the monthly Human Services Committee meeting to order. First item on our business is roll call. I see that Supervisor Nudo is absent, he's excused. Supervisor Belsky is absent, she's excused. Our youth and governance, we understand is not gonna be attending, so we're without their services this evening. Other than that, we have the rest of our supervisors present. Citizens' comments. Any citizens in the audience who'd like to comment or address the committee? You have 33 seconds to do so. Citizens' comments are closed. Chairman, I don't have any comments other than to say that will we have a scheduled conflict with elections next month or will we not?
Yes.
Yes. First Tuesday is April 7th, so we'll have to look at another date and time.
Well, yeah, that was last month.
Anything in the plans at this point or is that going to be forthcoming?
It'll be forthcoming.
That's fine. No other comments? Supervisors' comments. Zach? Make something up.
All right, I'll make something up. I'm not gonna make it up though. It is something. So I'm sure everybody in this room has seen the posts that Mr. Mathewson made on Facebook this last week or in the last 2 weeks about DCFS. I did reach out to DCFS to have a meeting to address this. This is something that happened in my day before I was supervisor. Kind of got a rough outline of what occurred and was looking forward to meeting with Ron Rogers to kind of discuss further what was done, what remedies we had, things like that. Initial meeting was canceled due to the other party feeling ill. We rescheduled and then the following meeting was also canceled, this time by corporation counsels in fear that some confidential information may be discussed and kind of put the county at liability. I did reach out to Corporation Counsel with some additional questions I had. I got another email back saying we can have a meeting with Corp Counsel there, Mr. Jansen there, as well as Mr. Rogers. Didn't really address my questions that I had sent, so I will be talking with Corporation Counsel tonight at or before the county board meeting to see if I can get what I did reach out for answered and the information I was looking for. So we're kind of going around what I was trying to get at, and I'd like to just get straight to the point. So
when the information is forthcoming, if you feel appropriate, let's have it as an agenda item.
For sure.
On here, you can reach out and have Kathy put it on the agenda, or John Jansen, and we can discuss that at a future meeting if it so warrants. Any other supervisors' comments? Seeing none. I trust you've had the chance to look at the minutes of February 4th, 2020. Entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Rodriguez, second by Supervisor Berg. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any in adverse, same sign. Seeing none, passes unanimously. Resolution to reapprove the reappointment of Ellen Cupfer to the Human Services Board. Who is handling it?
I have that one. Thank you. Ellen's been an active member of the Human Service Board. I believe she's attended 18 out of 22 meetings. The ones she's missed were excused due to vacations or out-of-town travel, and would ask that you support her reappointment to that board tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Motions are made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Seeing none.
What was the second?
Second was Supervisor Sullivan. Resolution passes unanimously. Next item on our list is resolution to create an account in the Department of Human Services for the Division of Veterans and Division of Children and Families to accept donations.
I'll take that one also. So there is a slight adjustment to this agenda item. It's not a change in what you have as far as the resolution, but actually the resolutions for the Department of Human Services, not just singling out those two divisions. So it'd be Veterans, Health, Division of Aging Disability Services, Children and Family Services, Medical Examiner's Office also falls underneath there. Brookside has its own resolution already, so we just kind of mirrored that. We have been getting donations in the past. However, when we went back to check to make sure we had a resolution, we realized that that had not occurred yet. So I know Veterans gets a lot of donations for their stand down that they do. And so this is to make that official for us, just mirroring the same language that's been applied to other areas in the county.
Discussion?
I have a question.
Supervisor Maurer.
You might have said this. Are those individual accounts for each or just one big?
They would fall. A lot of times you have somebody that, for example, had a positive experience with Aging and Disability Services. So they'll come in and say, you know, I'd like to write a check for $500 specifically for this purpose in that division. So it'll be tracked based on what that donor wants it to do. So,
yeah,
yes.
Gotcha.
So who would be the fiscal agent or entity that would oversee the?
Ultimately, Tammy's the Department of Human Services CFO, okay. So that would fall underneath her, and each division has staff attached to it that would track that.
Okay.
And then can either this committee or the Finance Committee be updated with when we receive donations? Not necessarily who they're from, but
the sum. Certainly we can bring that here, saying, you know, it's usually a feel-good thing anyway. Somebody's giving you a donation to do something, yeah. We can share that.
And if anyone has interest on this committee, you know, we could ask for perhaps quarterly updates on some of these things, whether it's this or any other particular metrics you'd like brought forward. You know, I have a particular interest in Brookside. Supervisor Nudo, of course, is intimately familiar with their workings. John, you are as well. So in the future going forward, any supervisor who would like some type of semi-regular update,
I might just add, like at Brookside, we had to do something like that because we got donations for the beauty shop, for example, specifically for the beauty shop. And the gentleman didn't want any notoriety, but we knew who it was. And but we had to funnel it into a fund there and make sure that it got spent on the beauty shop. When they renovated the building, that money went towards renovating it and doubling the size of the beauty shop.
Okay.
When Joe Bertelli donated money, he didn't give it for any specific reason, but he turned around and gave us a couple $100,000. So we have that in that account too. And it's invested in an account with Kenosha Foundation. So we're trying to find out every way we can when people leave there or families have somebody leaving there to donate money for the enhancement of the paid people that are living there, activities, things like that. So it all goes back into, like the picnic that they have in the summertime. It could be a much bigger picnic. So it's working out really well. And all these other agencies that people want to give to a specific reason that they had for the veteran or for disability services because they helped them out. But I think they just needed to make sure fiscally it was all handled the same way internally.
Very well. Thank you for your comment. Any other supervisors' comments? Otherwise, entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Supervisor Regas makes the motion. Supervisor Maurer seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Seeing none, motion passes unanimously. Resolution passes unanimously. Number 7, presentation, Bridget Cardinale, School Health and Head Start Programs.
So Bridget is a nurse with the Division of Health who oversees the school nursing program, so the Kenosha Unified District contracts that service with our Division of Health, and also the Head Start program. She's here tonight to give you a little overview of that. So we have it up on the screens, and I'll turn it over to Bridget.
Hopefully, the clicking works.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. So school nurse consultants, we're kind of the link from the healthcare system into the schools and hopefully producing productive students into the communities. So our program is made up of 4.5 FTEs, but it's spread out over 8 staff members. And so how that looks is we have 4 staff members that are assigned exclusively to schools. That's Nicole, myself, Molly, and Kate, and 4 staff members that also have other grants or programs. So they might have only 10 hours a week to schools, and the other 30 hours are towards another grant. So it kind of it allows us to expand the services that we're allowed to provide for KUSD, for Kenosha Unified, because we're all there full-time, 8 of us, even though they're receiving those benefits of having a nurse available all week long, but they might be working for another program as well. So the functions of our school nurse consultants, what these pictures mean, in the very beginning when school nursing first developed, it was stemmed out of public health nursing. So the schools, as they developed, they couldn't keep the kids in school because of communicable diseases. So public health nurses went out, did the assessments, and decided if the kids can stay or not. Vaccines were developed, and so communicable diseases obviously is not as big of an issue, but the school nursing was still needed because as kids were healthier and able to come, other problems arose. So the picture you see in the bottom is an EpiPen dispenser. We have stock EpiPens in the schools, and we train all the staff on how to recognize anaphylaxis, when it's important to give Epi. 911 obviously is always called when we give that, but it's available to anybody in the school system. So it's teachers, staff, visitors, as well as students. Center, we have the AED in every school, so that's the defibrillators. If anybody is passed out or is pulseless, we apply the AED while we're in 911, and we have a much faster response to that. We do have children that are attending school that have cardiac conditions that we do need to have AEDs on site for. And in the top picture, recess looks a lot of fun, but to a school nurse, we're thinking, well, who's had a concussion last week? Who shouldn't be climbing on the playground equipment? And the students with seizures aren't supposed to be climbing, so recess looks like a lot of fun, but a school nurse is a fun squasher, and so we usually find all the reasons to stop doing anything. The picture off to the right is asthma. So a lot of our school nurses, when they have a student in the office as they walk in asking for an inhaler, they're doing an assessment on their asthma. Are they using the inhaler appropriately, asking for it at the right time? Is it working for them? Can it be used differently? And lunchroom, we're thinking allergies. We have allergy tables sometimes in classrooms, or I'm sorry, in cafeterias. And ironically, I went to go visit one year, and they had 8 kids all in the same grade with food allergies. So they all thought, let's sit at the food allergy table. Well, one has a peanut allergy, so he brings almond butter, and he's sitting next to the kid with a tree nut allergy who's eating peanut butter. So they all thought they were being safe, and luckily the school nurse assessed the situation and fixed it, so we separated them all. In the bottom corner, actually, you see a student with diabetes. They have devices. Diabetes has come a long way. So this student is wearing a device that administers insulin through a pump that looks like an iPod kind of handheld device. And on the other side of the belly is a device that measures their blood sugar. And it can measure it every 3 to 8 minutes, varying on which device they're using. So they have another device that they hold in their hand that tells them if they're going high or low or where they're trending. Parents can watch their blood sugars on their own devices when they're at work, and they can text their kid, hey, I see you're going low, get some juice. And our school nurses also have access to that, so they can watch on a computer screen. If they have 8 diabetics, they can see where their sugars are trending and what they're doing, and sometimes catching, you know, if they're going high or low before the student actually feels it. Students want to be students, so they might not be feeling well, but if they have a test that they want to finish, they will deal with that low until they're done with that test. And so this is a really good way to kind of keep an eye on our students. So what services look for Kenosha Unified in particular? So it is a state statute that schools receive registered nursing services. They have to be available to write policies and procedures for the schools. So KUSD has contracted with Kenosha County for specific services. But they also do have comprehensive high schools. So Bradford Trumper and Indian Trails have their own school nurses paid for by KUSD. They're not part of the county. And those school nurses work full-time in those three buildings, and they've been there much longer than we've been in Kenosha Unified. Special health needs nurses oversee a very fragile population. They have a caseload of about 30 students, and these students will have things like G-tube feedings or severe seizure disorders and need a much tighter tighter watch on them. So then you have school nurse consultants, which is your Kenosha County public health nurses, and we're contracted for services to 39 schools. So we have kids all the way from ages 3 up to 18. So what it looks like in pictograph, that's the top part is the 4.5 school nurses that you see. All those little school buildings are 37 school sites. Inside those buildings, we have 16,000 students. So the ratio recommendation has changed. It used to be one nurse for 750 students, but they've looked at that's not ideal, because what if you have 300 students? It just doesn't work out. So they're looking at what is the workload of the school nurse. And so for school nurse consultants, it's very different than a traditional school nurse that is at the school site. So we're able to do that through training the secretaries, and there's health infos at entry level that will see students, and then they contact their school nurse when they have an issue that might be bigger than what they can handle. We have a flip book with scenarios that might be in them, such as bleeding, a nosebleed that won't stop, first aid type items that are needed in it, so they can flip through it and see what does it look like when you need to call 911, when is it just a consult for the school nurse, and when can it wait until the school nurse arrives. It's also changed a lot over the years. We're accessible to them through phones. We used to have pagers, and before that we had nothing. We used to wait for the notes in our mailbox when we showed up once a week to see who's been having trouble with asthma. So now they can contact us immediately, and there's been times where I was headed to one school and I got a call from the secretary and she's like, this one's kind of big, can you come? And I was able to switch places and go to where it's needed to be. So it's handled a lot differently than it used to be a few years ago.
Before you move on, just a question about the school nurse consultant in relation to the school nurse. Can you elaborate upon that interplay and how it goes? And
yep.
Training for school nurse consultant versus school nurse.
Training. So it requires a 4-year degree, bachelor in nursing, to be considered a school nurse. That's the law that was passed, that you have to have a 4-year degree. There's no training in school nurse in nursing school for school nursing. There's pediatrics, there's emergency room, and then it's on-the-job training for school nurses. There are certifications through Madison and national certification that you can get for school nursing, but it requires 3 years of experience as a school nurse.
Is there a differential then between a regular school nurse and a school nurse consultant?
No.
They're one and the same.
They are one and the same.
So it's not a differential.
Correct.
Not a triage type thing.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So we also have added on a support for 4K community approach, which is a KUSD program in the daycares. So we have 8 daycares that were added this year. That was not included in the previous slide where you saw how everybody was divvied up. This is its own funding from KUSD, but it falls under the umbrella of school nursing. And so they receive the same services at the daycares. They have a school nurse consultant that they have access to that monitors medications and chronic conditions and is able to make sure that the kids are receiving the proper care.
How come, you might have said it, how come it's only so many preschools and 4K schools?
Those are the only ones that KUSD contracted with. So they actually have a KUSD certified teacher that attends at the daycare for 3 hours a day, and then they can have wraparound care with a non-certified teacher as the daycare program. So they're receiving 4K instruction without having to leave their daycare. That makes sense, because the schools also have 4K programs at them, but some parents aren't ready to let their kids go on to an elementary as a 4K student. They want them to have that daycare experience still, with only daycare age kids there, and so they have the access of the teachers and the curriculum there as well. So those are daycares that have agreed to the collaboration with KUSD.
And so can we reach out to other daycares on our own? I mean, we don't have
we're not. I don't know that we have the access to it, but KUSD does.
I guess my concern is because there was recently a lady that was running a daycare that was selling drugs out of her daycare in her home.
Is it a home daycare?
Yes.
Okay.
And I wonder if there was any way, if like we were involved somehow, we have seen something that somebody else might not have seen.
Right.
But the way of getting into care.
Well, and there's then they're not connected with home daycares. They're connected with daycare agencies, the sites, rather than homes. That's
who oversees home daycares?
I don't know. That's a good question.
They are certified through a contract that we have with community impact programs. And then the state, they have to follow certain requirements. So when there's a problem with one of them, certainly our staff gets involved in that when that is brought to our attention. But they're not the same as running a center or something to that effect. So.
I don't want to go off tangent here. We can talk further later.
There's a point, though. I don't know. The focus for the school nurse consultants is case management. The goal is to increase the attendance for the child and make sure that they're at school, they're able to perform to their ability. So we're looking at emergency health plans. If they have, for instance, asthma, we look at what that child needs, when they would need their inhaler, what are the triggers, what are the signs that they're having an issue, and we share that with teachers or staff that might come in contact with that student. We explain where their medications are kept, if they're able to take it on their own, or if they need assistance. And that is for any chronic condition that a child has. We write about 1,000 individualized care plans a year for the 16,000 students. Approximately 25% of our kids have a chronic condition, and 1,000 of them actually required their own individual plan. Medications we're looking at too. So a doctor writes the prescription, they come to the school with the bottle, and we have to make sure that the form is filled out correctly. Does it make sense that they're receiving it at school? When does it should be given, so it's not interfering with their day, where they're, if it's ADHD, when does their focus wear off, and adjusting that as needed. So we're continually monitoring how the medications are working for our students. Vision screening, we're trying to find out if they can't see. So if we do second and fifth grade right now, we would like to do all of them, which is what's recommended, but we don't have the manpower to do all of them. So they receive vision screening in second and fifth grade, and we send home letters recommending that they are seen by an optometrist.
Question on that. So there's not enough manpower. What do we need to, is there talk of, you know, what needs to happen to get that manpower to do kindergarten? I'll say it for myself because my daughter's in kindergarten and trying to keep a pair of glasses on her face is terrible. I've gone through three pairs already in less than 3 months. But she's behind. She's behind enough, I think, because of her eyesight.
Yep.
Waiting till second grade for that screening. I mean, it's great.
Yep.
If a teacher sees that or whatnot. But
yeah. So kindergarten and 4K receive a screening from KUSD. Oh. So not from school nursing. So then we're catching the ones who have vision changes later on.
Okay.
So while kindergartners do receive a screening, and a much better screening than what we have, they've got the SureSight machine, so it catches more often, and we're doing the vision distance so that we're seeing, you know, are they catching on what's going on in the classroom on the board.
And this is outside of parents just taking their own children,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we definitely see it more at schools that you would guess that maybe kids aren't getting taken to the doctor.
KUSD does kindergarten what?
4K.
Okay.
Is there any auditory screening done as well?
Kindergarten as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we don't do any beyond that.
So how many of these machines would, like, your department need, your nurses need to provide adequate? I mean, because, like, I got my glasses, I want to say first grade, and it was, to me, like, I couldn't tell you who noticed I needed them first, if it was me, my mom, a teacher, but I know, like, today at least, or going through high school or whatever, there's no way I could do it without my glasses.
Right, and kids get so used to not seeing.
So is that something that we need to look into providing for you guys so you have the equipment that you need, so you're going beyond just a, you know, a distance eyesight?
I'll look in to see how many we would need and the cost, and we definitely would always be looking to more.
That certainly be something that would have to be negotiated with KUSD because they're paying for that service right now.
Right.
So, that would be a decision that would have to be including them at the table saying, is this something you'd like us to provide? If so, this is the cost for that.
So right now KUSD students are getting their vision screened in kindergarten.
Kindergarten 4K with the SureSight machine, and anything beyond that, the school nurse does it with the chart on the wall.
But so 4K, kindergarten, sixth, you said?
Second and fifth.
Yep.
Yeah. And we will do any child that if somebody comes up and says we think they have issues or they aren't seeing right or they're complaining of headaches, we'll offer the vision screening for them.
And then you would contact the parent saying,
yep.
You know, we've recognized the...
Yep, they receive a letter, and then a month later, if we haven't heard back from them, we call them to find out if they received the letter, if it went home or stayed in the backpack, and to find out if they needed any resources to find glasses or an exam.
And are there statutes, if we go back to medications, because again, I remember doing all that. You got medicine, you had to bring it to the office. But I'll admit, too, like when I was in high school, in even 6th, 7th, 8th grade.
Don't tell me that.
I'm out of KUSD now. But so I guess that's my question. Are there statutes that
yes.
like students should not be
hearing? Because it's a drug-free zone. That's where the statute falls. Yeah, so they only have the ability to carry medication if it's an inhaler or an EpiPen, and it was signed off by the doctor. So carrying Tylenol or Advil is not allowed. I know it happens. I'm sure there's Lactaid in the lunch boxes, but we try very hard to make sure that all medications are kept and monitored in the office. And if we do see that it's not being done that way, we contact the parents to explain why. It's for the safety of that child and other children around them. Mm-hmm. Thank you,
Your Honor.
Detention.
Well, I carried Advil around when I was in high school.
We're on the subject of medications. In the high school level, is there Narcan?
There is not yet Narcan. There was an episode, I don't know all the details of it, but it is pushing them to revisit it. The school nurses that are at the three comprehensive high schools want it. They think it's extremely important to have it. But it is not yet there, and KUSD is, they're trying to make sure that it's necessary and safe, and they have trained personnel. So it's not easy. It actually took us 3 years to get EpiPens in the schools. So I can imagine Narcan's, we've been working on that for a long time.
How many cases of overdoses have there been in schools?
In the schools, there was only one episode this year that was recommended. Like when we called 911, they said, if you have Narcan, give it. So that's the first time I think that the reality was that the administrator saw that 911 is asking if we have it.
So that's an overdose. How many, is there an educated guess on how many people are using while in school?
I don't know, but it's...
That's asking people to tell you, but...
Right, and there's no way to monitor it.
I mean, we know the one that just died at 18 years old was a student for Indian Trail, if I remember correctly.
Harborside.
Harborside? Oh, yeah, that's right. Just last week, I think.
Yep. So I don't know the statistics on that, but I'm sure somebody will be able to get you. I'll work on that.
John, question?
From a high school standpoint, do the nurses get involved with the KUSD at all with the vaping and smoking that's going on in the high school?
Yes. So we also have, other than the three main comprehensive high schools, we have Harborside, Reuther, and Lakeview. So we do have high school students. And vaping is definitely out there. They look like zip drives. You can't even tell. In fact, we found them charging them in the outlets in the school, and the teachers didn't recognize that that's what it was. So there is education going out to teachers. We have a program that works with the Narcan program, trying to get information out to staff and teachers and explaining what it looks like, what the symptoms look like. It's hard. They're odorless and smokeless, so it's really hard to catch them. But it's, there is education out there for them. Yep. And then, not just something happier, staff trainings. We train staff once a year on field trips because they have all the students with health needs on their field trips and making sure they understand how to safely give medications and recognize maybe an emergency. The other programs, really quickly, I'll go through are Early Head Start and Head Start. Head Start falls under the umbrella of the school nurse program, so that's why it's lumped in here, but its partner is Early Head Start. So the performance standards for both of them are the same. They're developed by the National Office of Head Start. The performance standards are supposed to deliver comprehensive and high-quality services designed to foster health development for low-income children, and the standards are focused on education and early childhood education, medical, dental, mental health, nutrition, and parent involvement. The differences between the two, so Early Head Start is prenatal, so when mom is pregnant, all the way up to 3 years old. And then they graduate into Head Start, so they're there from 3 to 5. And at 5 years old, they're ready for kindergarten. The grant, so who pays for it, for Early Head Start is through Kenosha Achievement Center, and through Head Start, it's Kenosha Unified School District. So they have contracted for a higher number of school nursing services. They get 26 hours a week, whereas other schools get about 1 hour per 100 students. So they have contracted for a higher number of hours. They also have a lot of different requirements for that nurse. Location for Early Head Start is at the Kenosha Achievement Center building, which is one on 30th Avenue and 74th Street. And the location for Head Start is in the old Spaghetti Station, which is now Chavez Learning Station. So that is a 3 to 5 year old 4K program there. That's the only grade they have. There's about 400 students at that site. So another difference for Early Head Start, they're home-based. So they have advocates that go to the home and work with the parents once a week on information, and Head Start is center-based. The nurse for Head Start is Jody Rizzitano, and I'm the nurse for Head Start.
It says that the KAC is moving.
I don't know where it is, I forgot. But Jody had said, I believe it was temporarily at the Kenosha Achievement Center on Sheridan Road, and I don't know where their permanent location is. Sorry. Head Start locations other than Chavez Learning Station, they have 10 off-sites, which are in elementary 4K programs. So you'll have a group of 4K students in a classroom that might be 4K, and some might be Head Start students in there. So they've chosen the top 10 most needed sites. So this is where the children who would qualify for Head Start live. So that's Bose, Brass, Epsola, Frank, Greveno, Jefferson, McKinley, Strange, Vernon, and Wilson. Examples of the performance standards that we have to make sure occur: proof of medical and dental exams within 90 days of enrollment. We follow the state of Wisconsin guidelines for health and dental, physical, dental, lead, vision, hearing, blood pressure, growth assessments. We identify any health conditions that come through their physical, and we do follow up to make sure that they're getting to a specialist or to see if they need a health plan in place. The student center, so at Chavez and the 4K programs, eat as a family style. So they take something and pass it on so that they learn how to eat at a table with a group. Students in center base also brush their teeth every day after they eat. Home visiting requirements for early Head Start are 48 annual visits lasting 90 minutes each in the home. And there's a qualification based on income and need.
Are you guys doing those visits?
The home visits.
Yeah.
They have family service providers or family advocates that go out to the home to do, and it's teaching the parent how to teach through play. So it's not the school nurse that goes out. She will go with for a visit if they have any health conditions or she wants to follow up on dental care and talk to the parent that way. So we don't go to all of them.
I have a question that may be off the agenda, but just listening to the news in the past week, how would your program have any proactive measure in mind for, you got a pandemic coronavirus case in town, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
How are you going to test for it? How do you
So we are part of that. We're fielding questions from parents often. We get questions from the principals, you know, what do we do about this? School nurses have kind of a unique advantage being in the schools. I've always felt privileged to know what the virus looks like before anybody else knows the virus is around. I know the current one going around starts with a stomach ache and then the fever the second day. So we can see things coming up, and so we can talk to the principals and ask, custodial-wise, do you have them only doing highlighting and emptying garbages because you're low staff, or are you up to full staff and they're actually doing what they're assigned to do? And kind of having that, you know, we see the pending questions and it increasing, and then we can go back to the health department and we say, we're inundated with questions, what's going on? So we, being connected with the health department, have kind of a really quick in. I know the people that I can call right away and get the questions answered. And they are working with KUSD on what is your plan? Are you capable of doing online schooling or e-schooling for your students if they have to stay home for an extended period of time? So there's discussion going on, but no hard, fast plan in place yet.
Mm-hmm.
But so, everybody's thinking it.
Yeah, so public health has a role in communicable disease. So the virus or the COVID-19 that's out there right now certainly falls underneath that. And their role is to assess and monitor. So if they get a call from an emergency room that says we have somebody's presenting with these conditions, the test has come back or we're waiting for results, a public health nurse then reaches out to that individual, and there's a long questionnaire that they go through to gather all the information, including who's in your household, where were you, where have you been, you know, those kind of things. What are you doing? What's your job require? And gathering all that information, if a test comes back, they do it a lot on TB, for example. So if a test comes back positive, you know, does that person need to be quarantined? Or if not, to make sure that they're receiving their medication. In TB cases, a lot of times that means a public health nurse is going out there knocking on a door saying, okay, John, let's take your medication today. Good job, have a nice day, and move on. A situation like this, public health does not do the testing for that. That won't be a responsibility for them. But the ones that do it would immediately notify them saying we have a case here. And then they take over a more of a monitoring assessment role.
Monitoring in the sense of perhaps sit and watch, or being proactive and saying, you're quarantined, I got the court order, you're not going to be able to walk in this building and endanger the remaining 400 students.
Maybe not with coronavirus in mind, but we do have orders for pertussis, you know, not orders, but they're quarantined. If they are diagnosed with pertussis, they go home. So we can monitor attendance, and we're in communication with the school and the secretary that this child is not to return until this point, and they call us if they walk in the door, and then we are able to make sure that they understand the instructions.
We're not sitting in an individual's home, making right. sure that they're quarantined and things like that, but they're doing the checks all the time. So increasing, they could get a call on a Saturday and say, hey, we got a case. Put your people in motion and place. I know we're in the process of training some of the school nurses to become part of that communicable disease team, so that if it spreads and becomes a pandemic in this country, that we'll be proactively addressing that through the monitoring and, okay. and situations like that. So,
are and you're right. Are there cases of pertussis and such?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pertussis you actually, and chickenpox. You have to put that into.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of pertussis this year. I saw a lot of letters floating by my desk, alerting families with my name on it. So
you wash your hands thoroughly.
Yeah, yourself? Yeah. And don't put your hands right around and all that kind of stuff.
Question: CIP and CIT. Do our nurses, nurse consultants, get this training also? Is it something that would be a benefit to them?
I don't know if you've gone community.
Community
intervention partners and then, yeah, one's for the law enforcement. CIT, I believe, is for law enforcement. CIP is for community folks dealing with, to be able to assess and address folks with mental health issues. So it's okay. recognizing them. How do you approach somebody? How do you interact with them? You're not providing the actual treatment, but making sure they get into it. That certainly could be something they could receive through training, depending on when it's offered, because a lot of our school nurses, of course, have hours that they're spending at the schools, and sure. that schedule is not built into what they have.
Is that focused to mental health?
Yes. So,
okay.
Yes.
And we've had training on first aid for mental health for children
aid.
And
yeah.
for adults.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the training's available too.
Okay. Maybe I just get, because I know Debbie Ruber just emailed me with the class that's going on next week, the 10th and 11th, but maybe it's an opportunity to get the school nurses and or the nurse consultants in during the summertime when there's less students in mm-hmm. school.
And we'll take all the training we can get. With mental health, it's happening in the schools more and more often. And so any ideas on how we can, you know, the anxiety attacks are, they're hard to get through with the student and when.
Their lack of professionals, mental health professionals right now. I mean, I know a lady that was freaking out because she's got to sleep with her kids on her kids' floor because Rogers doesn't have available beds, Ascension doesn't have any, you know, so.
Yep, it's not an easy system.
And then that rolls into the school environment.
So. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Further questions for Mrs. Cardinale here? Seeing none, thank you for your presentation. It was well received. Any other business we have to discuss here? Supervisor Rodriguez.
I know a presser went out with that Jen is actively, Ms. Freiheit's actively monitoring the coronavirus situation. I mean, what steps do we have in place now? Would it be treated as any other outbreak?
Right now, the best information you're going to get on that is through the CDC website. So the role that they play, once again, is that assessment and monitoring. If we get notification that someone tests positive or there's a suspicion of, and that's going to come through doctor's offices, ERs, hospitals, and things along that line. So that's the role that health will be playing. Certainly being proactive and releasing, you know, how to make, you know, washing your hands for 20 seconds. Don't put your fingers up by your face and all those kind of things that you shouldn't do normally. Clean your cell phone, you know, your phone in your office and things like that. So we'll be continuing to push that kind of educational information out and then monitoring anything that draws suspicion from the health professionals in our community.
So are there steps that we take as a county once we're notified?
Well,
or is our job really letting the rest of the community know that it's
our job is to educate and monitor at this point in time. If they're, and I'm sure they're going to develop a vaccine. You've heard that on the news, and right. That's probably a year and a half to 2 years out. And it was like when H1N1 came through the swine flu, there was large lines that health was giving immunizations for. So when that becomes available, a lot of times it gets put back into the public health departments to set up those mass clinics. So that would be something down the road as the government and researchers develop that sort of thing. And I'm sure that they'll play a major role in the mass clinics if need be. So.
Any other comments or business? Let's make a suggestion for our meeting. If we do have an agenda items that we need to address in April, perhaps we'll make it coincidental with the county board meeting for that first meeting in April.
When's your first meeting? That Wednesday then? After
well,
the
usually
election?
It would be the first Tuesday of the month with the election coming up.
Yeah.
They often do shift it to Wednesday.
Is that a reorg meeting? I mean, will this committee
be necessary to have a meeting?
So, I'm just wondering, will this
agenda,
committee...
Let's just postpone until May. If we don't have a list of agenda
items. If something comes up that certainly needs to be brought to the Human Service Committee's attention, we'll ask for a meeting to be held.
Correct. That'll be fine.
Thank you.
Other than that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Celebrate and Berg in that order. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those who would like to stay and discuss further. Seeing none,
you just have super immune system.
Does somebody have the...